man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out, and you can't make us run. Those wooden old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Welcome to the Situation Report for October 2nd. Supposed to do an interview with Joel Skosin today. I don't know if we got wires crossed or not, but I haven't seen him in the last hour. I haven't heard from him, so he might have got his time zones mixed up, but it is what it is. We'll get him on one of these times. That's a little Hank Jr., Country Boy Can Survive. I figured that was appropriate to play today, seeing as how what's going on in North Carolina and stuff around that. Got an email today from somebody in Carolina, and let me read it to you. Where did I have that at? Too many emails. It's bad when you get hundreds of emails every day and you have to sort through them and then figure out which account you got them on. Where's that here? Okay. No, I have it in here somewhere. There it is. So wanted to reach out and give you the insider, the listeners, an update on the situation in North Carolina mountains. Personally, we're approximately 60 miles from Asheville, North Carolina. News and media are very dramatized and hyped up. Yes, from last Thursday, 9/26 until Tuesday, 10/1, all comms were down. No 911, no cell, no internet in Jackson County, North Carolina. We used UHF, VHF, GMRS to communicate in our local area. It works well with practice, quote unquote, practice. Many people are still without power. All services are cash only. Always carry some usable cash. The reliance on internet still boggles my mind for some people. I stay and try independent, prepared, regardless of the internet. Deliveries are beginning to trickle into our small town by truck. I was able to grab some supplies from a local grocer, and then he talks about his setup at home. So thanks for that. Appreciate that one. That was from Mark, so appreciate that, Mark. So that's a good thing. Things are starting to move, but there's tons of panic everywhere else. And you're seeing, I mean, so today was the Marburg, the re-release of Marburg that we've been talking about or hearing about for 2 years. They re-released it today. So it is what it is. So they're going to try and do something to keep people at home. And Marburg in Germany, better time for it shows up here. But here's the thing. For Marburg to infect you, you basically have to have blood contact. So good luck with that. Like monkeypox, right? That should sound familiar. So anyway, and the fear is ramping up here over the longshoremen strike. People are raiding Costco. Why do you need to buy all the toilet paper? I mean, really, people are going to Costco to buy toilet paper. Really? That's mind boggling to me. My glasses are screwed up all of a sudden. Anyway, I think it's funny that people go to Costco and stock up on on toilet paper. All right, how many dumps a day are you going to take? I mean, I think most people are pretty well standardized there on how that goes. But it just the level of stupid is just unbelievable. And but here's what it shows. It shows the reach that mainstream media still has when people are going to buy. It's like when there's a storm, people are like, I'm going to go to the store and get milk and bread. I should go get more perishable shit just in case the power goes out. I never got that logic, but that's out there too. So they're ramping up the fear. They're going to continue to ramp up the fear, and they're going to continue to do whatever they can to cheat in the election. And look, they've architected this almost 4 years ago. They've just enhanced it over the last 4 years. And somebody asked me about the debate today, last night, between the vice presidents. I didn't care. I don't care. They're going to install Harris. They're never going to allow Trump to take office. I don't know how many different ways to say it. Like Colonel Conrad asked me, hey, are you going to watch the debate? I'm like, why would I do that to myself? If I want to watch two chimps, I'll go to the zoo. I mean, it's more entertaining because at least they like chase each other around, throw shit, spit on each other. This is just two chimps in suits talking about things that nobody cares about. So why would I invest in that? Now, if you're asking me if I'm going to vote on election day, yeah, I'll probably vote on election day. Why not? Full send. We should go show up and, you know, vote in mass and scare the hell out of them. But here's where the rubber meets the road. The rubber's going to meet the road when people stand up and push back. And the way that's going to show up the first and the first stages of this is noncompliance. Then the second thing is going to be gunfire. So I've said it 100 times, bears repeating. The bottom line is, at the end of the day, what's your line in the sand? Because the first thing we should do is take the whole country full stop. No trucks roll, nothing rolls. And that's supposedly what this longshoreman thing's going to do. We'll see. I seem to think that they'll bring this to a quick close. They'll pay them more money, and we'll see higher prices at the stores. But, you know, stranger things have happened. Now, the real question of the day is, what's the escalation going to look like in Israel? And what's the escalation going to look like from the missile attack last night? So supposedly they took out an airfield and oil supplies. We'll see how true that is. I don't believe anything on initial report. I don't believe anything usually for 24 to 48 hours until the story develops. And let's go back to Trump assassination attempt in Pennsylvania. There's still parts of that that are unexplained that don't make a hell of a lot of sense to me. So the question that we should all be asking is, what's the ground truth? And will we ever get the ground truth? Because I don't think we will. And I honestly don't think that even if we do get the ground truth, that the ground truth is going to be 100% accurate. But I do know this, that whatever the next step is going to be, whether that's airstrikes, ground invasion, which supposedly they started a ground invasion, there will be an escalation. And we continue to move troops over there. So the thing that we should be watching for, especially in our end of the stick, is how many U.S. troops are being moved over there right now? And what does that look like for deployments? And where are they being deployed to? Those are the things we should be paying attention to. Because we have forces in Poland. We have forces in Macedonia. We have forces now in Cyprus and probably other parts of the Middle East, Syria, Iraq. And that's a question. Are those die-in-place missions? Are they just sit there as, you know, staked goats waiting to get attacked? You could make the case for all of that, including the Eisenhower battle group. So just take your pick. They're setting the stage for a wider conflict. They're consolidating power here at home. They are trying to their best to sell Walz and Harris as the top front runners, which everybody knows is a farce. The only people that actually think that those, you know, those two knuckleheads are in the dead heat, or at least in the lead, are people that are never going to vote for Trump anyway. They've already made their decision long ago, and they're not going to change their decision based on polling or debate, any kind of debate performance. And from what I understand, Vance wiped the floor with Walz last night. Of course, that's not hard to do when you're dating a chimp with two symbols. You know, that debate was literally, you know, stacked already, and he turned it around on both CBS and on Walz. So, okay, great. Good performance. Still not going to change anybody's vote. Everybody that's going to vote for Trump is still going to vote for Trump. Everybody that's going to vote for Harris is still going to vote for Harris, all four of them. And they're going to make it seem like it's 400 million and there's not 400 million people in this country. Well, there probably is now, but you get my point. They're gonna make it look like she won, but the reality is that her polling is terrible. His polling is terrible. Everybody sees right through them. The only people that are buying into this are the people that are buying into the propaganda anyway, and they're never gonna change their opinion. Walz made 30 trips to China, 30. Yeah, you can assume that he's a communist, card-carrying communist. And what I don't get is, why didn't he just move there and just drink in the communism? Why stay here? Oh, that's right, because he's probably an asset for the Chinese, like Obama, like the rest of them who have sold their souls to China. All you have to do is go look at where the money comes from, and you can see who's owned by China. In fact, a big portion of the funding that came for X, go look at where that came from. Go look at the donor list, and you'll start to see a very, very distinct pattern. Along with the fact that all the donors that have been listed so far all have major affiliations in China, just like most of the politicians in this country, they have revenue streams coming out of China. So there's no surprise there that Walz is a Chinese asset. And, you know, if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, it's pretty much a duck. So none of that surprises me. What does surprise me, though, is people are surprised by the fact that FEMA and the state authorities in North Carolina are telling people to stop moving aid. And they went after helicopter pilots today to say, stop moving aid. You trust us, rely on us. And their answer was, go fuck yourselves, which is the right answer. And why do I say that? Because now is a time for us to be ungovernable. We don't have to wait for the election. We can disrupt their plans right now. In fact, somebody asked me today, you know, if the cops showed up to my house because of the mountain of offensive shit that I post on Twitter, which, by the way, if you haven't seen my Twitter post, then you should go out there because I flame everybody on Twitter. I don't mix words. You know, I hit the guardrails every day. And Cornbread, no, Jill Skosen hasn't showed up. I don't know if he got time wrong. I'm not sure what's going on with that. But I had comms with him yesterday, sent the link this morning, and I haven't seen him since. So he could have gotten times mixed up. He could be dealing with something. I figured I would have heard by now. So it is what it is. So we'll do, I'll do a sit rep. It is what it is. The point I was trying to make was that we don't need to wait for the election to be ungovernable. Now is the time for us to be ungovernable anyway. And then somebody asked me, you know, what are you going to do? And if the FBI shows up to my house, ask me a question about social media. That's a very simple conversation. Am I under arrest? No. Go fuck yourself. We want to talk to you about this. Go fuck yourself. We should really talk to you about this. Would you step outside? Go fuck yourself. Get off of my property. Call my lawyer. Go fuck yourself. It's a very simple conversation. I mean, the guy that actually released the video where the two FBI agents, that was brilliant. You should be ashamed of yourselves. Go home and contemplate all of your bad decisions across your entire lifetime and then repent for your sins. Yeah, I don't have the patience for that. Having dealt with cops before for whatever variety of bullshit, you know, you get to the point where you realize that their whole mission in life is to get you to admit something while you're talking to them and then walk you into the back of the car. Just dip it right in the butt. Go fuck yourselves. I have nothing to say to you. And, you know, if they put you under arrest, don't say nothing to them. I want my lawyer. Go fuck yourselves. So there's not a lot of wiggle room there anyway. And if they're going to come and arrest you for something, why tell them? Why give them any more ammunition so they can charge you with more shit? Call a lawyer, let a lawyer do it. And if they're going to arrest you for something, it's going to be a bullshit charge anyway. So they're already going to have a racked and stacked before they even pick you up. They're just going to pick you up. So just keep your mouth shut, go along for the ride, call your lawyer, make bail. It is what it is. Because eventually the shit's going to fall apart anyway. Look, the best thing we can, and I said this today on Twitter. The best thing we can do right now, especially against propaganda, is you have to call out the hypocrisy. Everything that they post is a lie. You post a fact, and you just call out the hypocrisy. One of the ways that the propaganda war was won during World War II was countering the party rhetoric and showing how crooked the party was. And it's no different than it is right now. Just look at COVID. How was COVID disrupted? It was disrupted because people started posting videos of all of the leadership across the country breaking the COVID rules, not wearing masks, going to parties, especially California. They crucified Gavin Newsom because they showed that he's a hypocrite. But more importantly, they showed that the entire thing was a lie from the first place. And because it was a lie, people stopped following the rules. They stopped adhering to it. They stopped being governable. And now have they been able to instill any kind of lockdowns or any kind of mask mandates? No, because the population has realized it's all BS. So they're not going to do it again. So that took the wind out of their sails. Just like we took the wind out of the German sails of World War II, because we showed how corrupt the fascist party was in Germany. If you were affiliated with the party and you played the game and you were an industry leader, you would get contracts to support the war, to support the government. If you weren't, and you weren't close to somebody, you didn't play the game, you didn't get contracts. The Brits played off on that. Not only did they play off on that, but they would post stories about German officers with hookers and having sex parties. I mean, does all that sound familiar? All of it sounds exactly like what's going on today. And it was all true. They didn't have to make anything up. They just had to report the truth and call out the hypocrisy. Why do you think they want to censor you so bad? They want to censor you because they don't want the truth coming out. They don't want people to know that all of these stars, all of these politicians, and all of these leaders around the world were partying with Hollywood and with the music industry, especially with Diddy. I mean, there was a couple of articles that came out in Substack that talked about all the different dignitaries that were affiliated with Diddy and all the parties and supposedly tapes that they had on it. And then last night there was a video that came out about somebody who was on the inside talking about all the videos that Diddy had on people. So you've heard me say before that Epstein Island was not the only place where they were doing, you know, blackmail and blackmail ops. They had multiple islands. Diddy's just another island. And his island was the music industry. And that, how many people did they trap? How many politicians? How many key leaders? I mean, there's talk, open talk now about a Barack Obama being at Diddy's parties and there being tapes on him. So where I'm going with all this is it's the same hypocrisy that was taking place back in World War II, the same blackmail ops that were going on in World War II. It's the same stuff that's going on now. And the way we win the war is we call out the hypocrisy and we show the world what these people are doing in the background and all the deviant behaviors and all the inside dope deals and all the family and nepotism. You show all that, people start to realize that the cards are stacked against them. And next thing you know, you got a revolution instead of a civil war. That's what we need to do. That's the next order of battle. The next order of battle is not going to be kinetic. It's going to be calling out the hypocrisy and showing the entire world what these people are really doing in the background. And then banding together as a country and throwing them out. That's what they're deathly afraid of. They're not afraid of us fighting each other. They don't care. They want us to fight each other. What they're deathly afraid of is we put aside all of our political and ideological differences and we fight together against them because they know there's not enough of them. And more importantly, they don't have enough bullets. So the next order of battle is not kinetic. It is going to be being ungovernable. It is going to be bringing the country full stop, disrupting all their plans through noncompliance, disrupting all their plans through not following their bullshit laws. And mark my words on this. They will install Harris. They will install Democrats down the ticket at every swing state. And then they will go and they will change the Constitution with a 2/3 majority first thing in January. That's exactly the first thing they're going to do, along with they're going to stack the court, the Supreme Court. That's exactly what they're going to do. And then they're going to try and enforce a police state if we're not kinetic by then. And that's when things will go kinetic. But from November until January, full fucking stop. And I mean full stop. Wear a mask. Fuck you. Walk into a store. And if you noticed in the stores, they're putting in gates. You got to go through a swinging gate now. It's got to open up for you. Next thing you know, there's going to be a QR code attached to it. Oh, you want to shop? You got to get a QR code. Everything's rationed now because of the strike. Oh, well, you want to get out of the store? You got to pay your bill and you got to have the right social score. And by the way, you got to have the right amount of calories. Otherwise, we can't sell you anything. That's where they're going with all this shit. It's not hard to see. But the point is, and I've said this before and I'll say it again. First time I walk into a store and there's a QR code requirement to get through the gates, I'm going to call somebody over and I'm going to say, where's the store manager? And then I am going to slam his forehead into the gates and say, if you don't turn this off, I will rip these out of here and give them the choice. And that will be game on. Because it's coming, folks, and it's not that far away. But here's the piece that we don't have. If you really want to take this full stop, dox everybody that is on the oligarch side, on the elite side that's behind this. All the players, all the interlopers, all the intermediaries, all of the go-to people, all the doers that are supporting this, and I guarantee you, you'll get a reaction, especially when you start going after guys like Larry Fink. And you start marking his location on a moving map where he knows he's being watched and he knows wherever he's going. People know exactly where he's at. Same with Bill Gates and all the rest of them. Those guys spend tremendous amounts of money on security, and they have tremendous amounts of doubles. You know, Gates has three jets he flies in, and he flies in three jets because if one gets taken down, they don't know which one he's in. The shell game, right? But if you dox which airplane he's in and you put that on a moving map, you don't even have to shoot him down. That will freak him out to the point where he won't move. You know why? Because he knows where everybody knows where he's at. And that guy moves around. He thinks he's moving around with impunity because he thinks he's protected. He might be protected by security, but if he sees his airplane on a moving map and it's identified by tail number and where he's going, guess what, folks? That'll get their attention. That's not blowing anything up. That's not shooting anybody. That's not bringing anything down. That's just highlighting, we know where you are. And we could play that game too. See, they're counting on the fact that the people in the shadows of the deep dark, that their anonymity is their protection. Their anonymity allows them to use the public figures that are in public positions but privately owned to do their bidding. Their anonymity allows them to use interlopers and some of their trusted agents to do all of their dirty work. But when you highlight who they are, you highlight what they're doing, you highlight where the money's going, I guarantee you it will get their attention because they've never had to worry about their safety. And for the first time, if they have to worry about their safety, I guarantee you it's going to get their attention. So all of those things matter, especially when you're in a situation where the environment around you is starting to erode. And there is Joel Skolson right there. Let me add him in.
Even I had a breakdown in my car and couldn't get to the office.
Yeah, you know, your timing's impeccable. I'm like, he probably had something going on and he couldn't get there or got the time wrong. It happens. So we about a half an hour in. I don't know how much time you have, but I have
got as much time as you need.
Okay, good. Because I have a ton of questions to ask you. I know the audience is going to have a ton of questions to ask you. First of all, thanks for doing this, because I know you get asked all the time.
Yes.
And if you guys haven't read Strategic Relocation, you probably should, because there's a lot of information in there. But let's start with the book, because there's several things that I've had questions for weeks and weeks to ask you and have that chance. So the first one is, given COVID and given the current state of affairs, especially in certain blue states and certain red states, have you changed your opinion of safe areas and places where people should relocate to, given those events?
Well, we did. You know, the latest edition came out as COVID hit. And so I did downgrade several states that turned blue, like Colorado, to a much lower rating. Of course, California went to a zero rating, and Florida still is a zero, but not because of COVID, because Governor DeSantis handled that as about as good as any governor could. But the problem is every red state, including Utah and Idaho, used emergency powers of which there is no basis in the state constitution in any state, red or blue, to cede fundamental rights under an emergency. And even though the COVID restrictions have gone away, the emergency powers have not been admitted to as illegal, and therefore they're still there. If there's another pandemic, it could happen again, even in red states. The only difference between red and blue is not the lack of emergency powers, they all have them, it's the resistance of the people. And there's a lot of resistance in red states to more emergency powers similar to COVID-19 and vaccine mandates, et cetera. But unfortunately, the emergency powers are still there.
That's so part of that, especially with the Washington state, they passed a state amendment which gave the governor of Washington the ability to do the lockdowns. But you're right, it was very nonspecific in the way they worded it. But I believe you're right, that's the only state that has that amendment. Given the current, well, let me back up. What's your assessment of the current situation as far as in the US, globally? Let's start there, because I know there's a lot there.
Well, in strategic relocation, the major threat, of course, is population density as it relates to major crises. And that could be an earthquake, it could be a major power outage or a grid down situation, such as in an EMP strike. But an EMP strike, it really takes 8 or 9 weapons to do a proper EMP strike to take down the entire grid in North America, not just one or two. And so only Russia and China really have the capacity to do that. And it is their military doctrine to throw an EMP strike about 15, 20 minutes before an actual nuclear strike. But the nuclear strike, in my analysis, will only be on military targets. They want to blackmail the West into submission. They don't want to destroy the infrastructure of which they depend upon, both for technology and for markets, speaking of China in particular. And so even though the war in Ukraine is at a serious stalemate, and Russia continues to, broadcast red lines that if they cross NATO, they'll go to war or use nuclear weapons. It's my analysis militarily wise that Putin can't use nuclear weapons against the West if he can't occupy. Military strategy, that just means the enemy rebuilds again if you nuke the military, and over time they come back to get you. But he can't occupy Ukraine, let alone Eastern Europe, let alone the United States. He has to wait for China. China does have the power or the troops and the shipping to occupy, or they think they can. I don't think they want to, frankly. I don't know of any country that wants to occupy the United States with 1 billion arms in private hands. That's a recipe for guerrilla war that would be very unwise to try. But nevertheless, that's the situation as I see it. I don't think the Middle East conflict will lead to nuclear war because China doesn't have to get involved there. I think the trigger event for World War III, which was probably coming toward the end of this decade, is going to be in the Far East, starting with an invasion of Taiwan by China. And I think that's a trigger for World War III because North Korea has said they're going to intervene if we try to intervene and stop Xi Jinping from taking Taiwan. And we have 26,000 troops in North Korea, in South Korea, which means we must intervene if North Korea strikes South Korea and U.S. Forces in Guam, Japan, or Hawaii.
Given the current state of our military, I don't see how that's possible by 2030. I mean, our military is in the decline. I don't see
it. Absolutely. But, China won't take on the West militarily until it feels it's fully ready in a first-class military. And even Xi Jinping has admitted it'll take till at least 2027 before we're a first-class military. Then he threw out 2040 just to kind of put the West at ease that it wasn't a threat. But I still think they'll be ready somewhere between 2027 and 2030.
I believe that. Yeah, they still have some major hurdles to overcome just on the Navy side, not just on the Army side.
Well, as you know, you can build aircraft carriers, but it takes 3 years to train crews on how to operate them. It's a real science as an aircraft carrier pilot, I can tell you, it's a well-oiled machine, and it takes a lot of time to learn those factors.
Yeah, yeah. I've said that on my show several times, that we're literally the only force on the planet that can operate carriers efficiently. I know the Brits can do it, the French can do it, but it's not the same as a carrier strike group that the U.S. has been operating for, better part of 80 years now.
And we're the only military that can do combined arms, too. Russia has shown it can't do that. And combined arms are very sophisticated in terms of coordination between friendly and enemy aircraft, between ground troops and air and EW and all the things, aerial refueling, all the things that go into a mix of combined arms that the U.S. and NATO can have. And even though that we're in decline, especially because of the woke military generals we've got, even when I was in the military, you couldn't get promoted to colonel unless you went through the National War College curriculum, and they were all taught by globalists from Georgetown University. And that's how come we've propagandized our general officers, and they vetted them so that only globalists get into the Joint Chiefs and the heads of the military services.
Yeah, the interesting side of that is typically when a nation's in decline, at some point the military diverges from the political body and there's a coup, let's just say a separation point. I'm curious when you see that separation point. I think it's going to be more like 27, 28 before the military parts ways with the current regime or apparatus. You might see it differently, but I don't think it's going to be in 25. I think they'll be kinetic in 25, but I don't think it will be on a wide scale until at least 27, 28. I agree with that too.
Well, you know, there's no way that you can start a rebellion in the military because of NSA surveillance, which is total now. A lot of pundits on the internet claim to have insider sources, but I'll tell you, the NSA would know exactly who's talking out of school and would shut them down. So if they continue, such as Mike Adams and Alex Jones claim to have insider sources, but if they were to continue, it means they got to be disinformation. And I'll tell you, I can list a dozen errors that those insiders have told Mike Adams and Alex Jones.
Oh, I can too, because I worked at Meade. I can tell you exactly what they're, and everybody thinks I'm crazy when I say it, but I'm like, I've been there. I've worked there. I know exactly what that looks like. And I know exactly what their capabilities are, especially in the shops that do deep cyber. I know exactly what those guys do, and I know how they do it. So, yeah. Sorry to cut you off, Joe, but you're right.
Now, even General Flynn got snookered on, in 2020 when he bought into the disinformation the military was going to do a coup and reestablish Trump as president. Well, I knew that couldn't be true because there's no way to organize a coup without the NSA knowing about it and their deep state. I tried to get General Flynn to admit who was it, of the generals in the military active service that told him that, because that had to be disinformation. He refused to tell me. And I was very sad about that because he is a very strong conservative, but you've got to, and there was one other general that bought into something.
Tom McInerney.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they bought into the German raid theory that special forces raided some server.
Yeah, place. And that's right.
And then that made the rounds and turned out to be false. Yeah, when all that Q related stuff came out, I went on a bunch of shows and burned the bridge because I said one very simple statement, and it's like devolution and some of these other theories. The enemy gets a vote, and regardless of how good your plans are, the enemy gets a vote, and the enemy's never going to vote your way. And if you're stacking your deck that everything has to go in a very sequential way in a very specific order, you're going to lose every single time because the enemy will make sure they disrupt your operations. I mean,
that's right.
You've been in enough complex operations in the air that went sideways as soon as you took off to know exactly how that game's played.
Exactly. No, that's very wise. And Q was obviously disinformation and meant to, keep a bunch of false hope around among the conservative movement. And it's very, very sad how many people, conservatives really would rather, and this has to do with strategic relocation. You know, it's not cheap to prepare for the coming war and for an EMP strike and the other crises that will happen. And if someone promises you a savior, someone who's going to drain the swamp it's very enticing to conservatives. They'd rather believe and have false hope that someone's going to do it. But I think the deep state is so deeply embedded throughout all of the law enforcement agencies and the dark side of government, as well as in our military, that I'll tell you, I, even with my knowledge, I'm one of the top experts in the history of the deep state, and it would be very difficult for me to drain the swamp just because, they control so many judges. They control all the FISA court. Those are all deep state judges. There's just so much that they can control, as well as the NSA. It's one thing to have, we have a lot of conspiratorial facts about the illegal acts of government, but most of it is still hidden under the guise of national security. And if you were president who knew what he was doing and told the NSA, all right, I want to wiretap all these individuals who are globalists or suspected deep state, we need evidence, hard evidence. They wouldn't do it. They'd tell you there's nothing there. because they're controlled by the deep state. Now, you could put in your own team, but boy, that would be very difficult to get them to be trained on all of the systems at Fort Meade and other places that are proprietary to, you know, to this the national security establishment.
Well, I think what's interesting about that statement is that even back in, so I retired in 13, and even back in from 10 to, I'm going to say even farther back, because we started working, I started really working closely with the folks at Fort Meade back in 2007. And we had, you know, folks from our unit supporting their operations for almost 6 years. And I can tell you that just getting to know the infrastructure that they were using was incredibly hard. And it was even harder to understand where all the data was going and what data they were collecting. They obfuscate everything.
That's right.
As much as you want to try and say that, you know, there's somebody that's all knowing, you know, even with the clearance I had, and I had, you know, I had a pretty high up clearance and saw a lot of things, I still couldn't penetrate the walls and get, you know, a clear picture of what capabilities were there. You get bits and pieces, but you never get the full picture. And that's by design. So even if you did take your own team in there, you fired everybody down to the janitor, you still have to burn the system to the ground and rebuild it from the ground up in order to truly be sure that they're all gone. And even then, you're going to have a cat fight doing that.
Yeah, and you'd have to have a William Binney on board who knows the systems. Or you'd have to have an Edward Snowden who knows a lot of this. And, you know, stuff's changed since then. One of the things that worries me is they've outsourced to Booz Allen Hamilton and other, about four other military industrial complexes, the data. So that's no longer held exclusively in NSA. They've farmed that out. So they've got, you know, that's a potential liability for them, because if you got somebody in there who knew what they were doing and subpoenaed some of these data contractors that the NSA has farmed the data out to, you know, they may not have purged their own information, their own wiretaps, their own, you know, because they take everything on the internet and everything that goes on in telephone. There may be some incriminating evidence you could find by subpoenaing the military industrial complex.
Well, I'm sure you could, because most of that stuff's in the cloud. So they have their own data.
That's right.
DISA's got data centers. The DISA's been right. Consolidating data centers, right. And they've been moving stuff to cloud. And there's a massive data center outside of Salt Lake City, massive.
That's right.
That
that's
they
right.
built for NSA, and that's just one.
Yeah.
So I know there's more, but my point of saying all that is, because I really want to get, I want to get your view on where, I want to transition, by the way, and transition away from that. If you were just starting out in this business and you knew something was on the horizon, what would be the things that you would recommend people start doing right now if they're, and I would break it up into three chunks, the folks that are just starting to prepare, the folks that are somewhat prepared, the folks that are really prepared. Do you have advice for any of them? Because I know they're going to ask me, so I'm going to ask you now and just let you talk, because I know there's a lot there to talk about.
Yeah, I sure do, Stephen. And, you know, I've been a pioneer in the preparedness movement since 1979. That's when I wrote The Secure Home. So I've been in this business a long time. And first of all, you've got to be prepared for the novice. You've got to be prepared to get out of the big cities. They're a death trap when there's no electricity, even if they aren't a nuclear target. And if I'm right in my military analysis, the Russians and Chinese only want to hit military targets in the first strike and then blackmail the West into submission. You've got some chance, you know, to maneuver, but you've got to make plans to get out of the big cities, because once the electricity's down, within 3 days, there's no food and water. There's no communications. There's no sewer. There's no electricity. There's nothing. And there's no gasoline that's going to be pumped. So if you haven't got a plan to get out, and in strategic relocation, for example, I do talk about that, for example, that beltways around major cities are like a moat. You can't get across that beltway except in two or three places where it does not correspond to an exit to the freeway or an entrance to the freeway, because those entrances and exits are going to be blocked with people, stupid people trying to get on the freeway, which if you knew, remember, Katrina is a stupid thing to do. It becomes a parking lot and then you got to abandon your car and walk away. But In every city, there are two or three under or overpasses that go across the freeway that do not correspond to an entry and exit. Look on Google Maps, circle around and find those places. That's how you've got to map a route out of the city. Now you got to have some place to go. And a lot of people can't afford a formal retreat, but I think people who can certainly need to do so and get into rural areas away from the beaten path. And if you can't afford a retreat, you've got to piggyback on the generosity of family or friends or anyone who has a farm or a retreat or something out in the cities. You've got to help them prepare. So you need to stockpile food, water, and, you know, if you're depending on cyber coins like Bitcoin to survive, they're not going to survive an EMP strike because there'll be no internet if there's no electricity. And forget about central bank digital currency. Even the elite are going to need cash when the grid goes down. And so even though I believe that at some point, silver coins, silver dollars may become a barter item, when the grid goes down, cash is going to be king. So you want to stockpile at least 3 months of cash and be very judicious about how you spend it. Don't pay your bills with it. Don't pay your mortgage. Nobody's going to be foreclosing on anybody if there's no banks, if there's no electronics to do that. Nobody's going to come into work to do foreclosures without electricity. So save your cash for hard items that you haven't stockpiled. But for those that have, and we do have at least 3 or 4 years before my earliest timeline of, I think, World War III, you need to prepare financially by stockpiling everything that you normally use. And what I mean by that is you eliminate your future need for money. If you don't have to buy anything, if you've stockpiled nuts, tape, glues, as well as food and water and supplies, light bulbs, toilet paper, all the things that you need, when you go to the grocery, start buying an extra and shove it away in storage. That's how you eliminate your future need for money and prepare for a grid down situation. Now, in a grid down situation, as you would imagine, Stephen, there's going to be a flow of refugees starting with about 3 days to a week without electricity. The store shelves will be empty. It's going to be, at first, begging, people going house to house, begging for food, et cetera. And that's a difficult scenario. And then it gets violent. Then people who are starving start to get desperate. And you have a few of your well-armed malcontents who will take it by force. And that's why you need, and this is one my number one recommendation for people in terms of security. I don't care whether you're in a suburban area, even if you have a retreat, even if it's a cabin, a rural cabin in the mountains, you must have a basement level concealed storage area. Because you've got to have some place to hide your valuables. If you're going to stockpile and eliminate your need for money, you've got to be able to hide it where people can't find it. And the greater use for that is that if you don't want to confront mobs coming down the street, pillaging house to house, you leave your doors open, you get everything into that storage room, and you lock yourself in, and they can't find you, and you don't have to confront them. Now, people don't think about that. But that's one of the most important things. You just can't shoot your way out of a pillaging, rampaging Mad Max scenario. Now, I believe in being armed, but only for people where I really, malcontents, people who are really a threat to me or someone who breaks in to my shelter, I'm going to be armed. But the higher point of valor is to avoid confrontation, especially among starving masses. You don't want to shoot people just because they're starving. You want to get out of the way. And you don't want to have to open the door and tell people, especially if they know you're prepared. That's one thing that preparedness people do. They tend to group together and tell everybody what they've got. And the other members of their group, when they run out of food, guess whose door they're coming to? They're coming to the one who's more prepared than they are, who bragged about how much food storage they have. So be smart. If you encourage other people to prepare, don't talk about what you've got. Don't show people what you've got. You've got to be very wise about this because desperate times. And if you think you're going to start sharing, you'll be starving within 2 weeks like everybody else. So you might as well not prepare if you're going to share. Now, I do have some emergency rations that I have to share if they're family or friends that, know where I am and how to find me. And that's rice. Rice is cheap. You can buy hundreds of pounds of bags of rice and give persons a handful of rice. It doesn't take a wheat grinder. to prepare. They can just boil it. If you're going to have something to give to people, you know, make it rice. That's the number one thing. Now, besides that safe room, of course, you don't want to be in total darkness in that safe room. And that's why you've got to have a system of backup electricity in a shelter situation. Now, I don't call it a bunker. A bunker implies that it's bomb-proof and it's got blast valves and other things. As I say in strategic relocation, if you're within 10 miles of a military target, a first strike target, and I list them in the book, move. Don't spend money on a blast shelter with blast valves or other types of things. Move, relocate, get away from military targets. And that goes for high density population areas that won't be safe anyway. But once you get into a safe area and you've got a safe room, and I've got several books at joelskousen.com in my architectural career to help you. They're do-it-yourself books, you know, how to build those shelters within a basement. That's your cheapest alternative. Or if you're going to modify your home, the secure home that I've written talks about how to build safe rooms under a remodeling portion of the home. And one of the primary areas that people can build one is under a garage extension, because people don't expect there to be a basement under a garage. So that's one of the best ways to hide a basement shelter under a garage. But you need to have an independent source of electricity. I like a combination of a medium-sized generator for times when it's cloudy and you've got to recharge your batteries, and a solar battery system, and have the essential equipment inside your shelter so that it cannot be tampered with. Now, we have a lot of new technology out there in the field called the solar generator market. And that's where you have, it's almost plug and play. You know, you don't have to hire a solar installer. You can buy one of these things. PoweredPortableSolar.com out of Idaho is probably the best deal for getting these solar generators. They do reviews on all of them. They are continually testing and checking to make sure that you know how long they'll last and what you can get for your money. So I highly recommend PoweredPortableSolar.com in Idaho. But these portable generators, like the Titan and other things, can do 220. They can run wells. You can add battery, lithium ion phosphate battery packs to them so that you can have up to several months of electricity without charging. And of course, if you have solar panels on the roof that won't get tampered with, you can keep those batteries charged. Generators generally don't recommend you build those into a shelter situation. They're noisy. They require special ventilation and heat extraction, but you can put generators in secure outbuildings or extensions on the garage so that they can't be tampered with. So those are the real three essentials, you know, preparing to get out of the big cities, having a safe room to conceal yourself and your valuables, and to have backup electricity and supplies.
So for the folks that, because there's going to be, I'm just preempting some of the questions I know I'm going to get, so bear with me. So there's going to be a swath of folks that say, well, I'm screwed because I can't move and I can't afford to move. And I'm in a high risk area. Should they have I'm assuming you're going to say yes to this, but I'm going to throw it out anyway, because I know what my answer would be, is have a displacement area that you can go to or set up some kind of a place to bug out to, because you're right, cities are going to be untenable, and especially in the center of the city. And at some point it'll be somewhat peaceful, like you said, then it'll be more violent, and then it'll be just a death center, especially as I think Matt Bracken says it the best, 3 days and you're into cannibalism, or you're always a week away from cannibalism, which I tend to agree. Right. Yeah. So I would say for those, well, I'll let you answer the question. For those folks that can't do that, what's your recommendation? Because I know.
Well, first of all, I want to disabuse people of the fact that I can't do anything. Remember, even if you think your situation is untenable now, when it happens and when there's no electricity and you're stuck in the middle of the city, that's when it's really untenable. That's when you really don't have any choices. And you'll think, oh, hey, I could have not gone out to dinner. I could have saved a little bit here and there. I could have at least got a camping place out there and I could have been prepared. Now, you know, I publish the World Affairs Brief every Friday from a standpoint of what the controlled media isn't telling you. And I intend to warn my subscribers about it. There's a modest subscription fee to it. It's about $1 a week. But I'll tell you, my subscribers are going to know in advance when this war is going to happen. So you won't be in the dark if you get, and I'm sure there are other newsletters out there that might be able to help you, but it can't be mainstream. Remember, the government knows this war is coming. They're preparing a lot of new underground bunker systems, and they're real bunker systems because they know the Russians and Chinese know where their obvious ones are, and they're building a lot of new ones out in the West Desert and other places. And they even built a major bunker system under the Denver airport. And that's not a conspiracy theory. That's fact. And that's the reason that airport went $1 billion over budget is from that underground facility. That's the second headquarters of the deep state, by the way, in Colorado. That's another reason why Colorado got downgraded is, you know, it's very much a deep state controlled.
You're talking about Denver International, the one that looks like a swastika from the air.
Yeah.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah, and has all those new age murals and sculptures in it. And
oh, you mean the satanic sculptures? Yeah, that are right. Yeah. There as you drive in. Yeah, those are hard to miss. Yeah,
they're kind of broadcasting their intentions, but these people are really evil. And you know, you've got to realize there is systematic evil in the world, and you got to face it. So, what I'm getting back to the question: what do you do if you've got very little resources? Well, everybody's got some resources, and don't be sure that you can't move. You know, remember, the only reason you're in the big city is because of jobs right now. And there's not going to be no jobs someday when this EMP strike comes and when there's no jobs, period. So you're not going to want to be in the cities. You're going to want to go back to a smaller hometown where you came from. And that's where I think there's going to be, I think, some potential to ride out this storm with if you've made any preparations at all and have some family that you can get back to. But if you don't have any money at all, at least you can prepare a bug out situation, bag, tent, all the material you need in a car. You can try to have advance notice. And I'll tell you what the trigger event's going to be so that you'll have at least 3 days to a week notice.
I was going to ask you, so I'm glad you're ahead of me. Thanks for that.
If you see China invade Taiwan and you see the U.S. and their carrier groups out in the Far East start to counterattack and stop them, we'll probably be within World War III within about 3 weeks to a month. And if you see North Korea come to the aid of China and start to attack South Korea, that's another secondary trigger event. And China has a defense pact with North Korea. If we have to use tactical nuclear weapons to stop the overwhelming power of North Korea's military versus South Korea, then that would be an excuse, I think, for Xi Jinping to launch on U.S. military targets. So that's the trigger event. If you see that happening, you want to make sure you're not in the big city. Take a vacation. It doesn't matter. Your job's not going to be there in 3 weeks anyway when war starts. So take a vacation, go camping, and get your supplies out there. If you have nothing else, don't make the excuse, I've got an apartment and I can't stockpile. Got to do something, because I'll tell you, when the EMP strike comes and the mobs are coming down the street, it's over if you haven't made any preparations at all. And you will say, I wish I had listened to Joel Skousen on Stephen Murray's show 5 years, whatever it takes. I wish I had listened, because I could have done something. You'll remember that you could have.
I agree with that. I you know, I've been talking about, so give you just some backstory here. 2 years ago, after the elections, I switched my entire platform to getting people prepared, because I knew at that point that some kind of either revolution or civil, you know, kinetic activity was going to take place in this country, probably within 3 years. And right now I'm seeing, I don't know if you're seeing the same thing, but I'm seeing a lot of lines of operation all converging to a culmination point. There's going to be some kind of an event here that either they suspend the election, they move to the election to strictly mail-in ballots, or, you know, remote voting of some kind. And they're going to do it this month. So what they'd like to do is suspend the election in general, just appoint somebody. They've already telegraphed that. Whether or not they do that, I don't know. But I see a wider war happening 25, 26, you know, kinetic taking place in 25 or 26. And somewhere in there is going to be the economic side of this when that collapses. So I think there's going to be kinetic soon. And we've been urging people, use your gear, replace the gear that you use that wears out, know how to use the things in your inventory, figure out the best inventory for your environment, have a bug out location, have a plan, have a comm plan, have alternative comms, have a, you know, what I call sphere of influence and line of sight. Your sphere of influence is your trusted circle of people that you've built over the last several years that you can count on when the chips are down, and have a plan with them, and then build a network of people that give you line of sight in your community. Because let's face it, when the comms go out, you're not going to have long distance vision. You're going to have very myopic views of the world and what's coming into your area, and having a big network of people that you can count on will expand the way you, as far as you can see. And it's going to make a lot more difference, especially when the mobs are coming out of the city and you're in a small town, to have as many people in that sphere of influence. So you can do community defense, you can do resource pooling, et cetera. And that's, at some point, that's going to have to happen just for the sake of barter, because there's not going to be any logistics moving. And, you know, the question I'm going to ask you is, and I'll give you my view of it, because this is just the micro view, is how do you think things are going to develop over the next 2 years? Because I think it's going to take us 2 years to get into full-blown World War III. I just don't see that move happening right now.
No, and I don't either. And I think your time frame may be a little bit early compared to mine. I just don't think Xi Jinping is going to be ready to take on the West in 2 years anyway. 3 years at the most, putting it around 2027, that's what he says. But it takes longer, as you know, military procurement and other things and getting people trained, it takes longer than what you think. Even trying as, and they are building fast. I'll tell you, China is in full-scale military production. Nobody's warning about this. The military occasionally talks about the China threat. And I know they're warning. I got a grandson in the Marine Corps recon, and I'll tell you, he's been getting briefings. They know that China's going to be the main starter of this event. But Russia's got to be there in alliance. You know, the media keeps throwing out the junk about we're in the war in Ukraine. We're pushing China into Russia into the arms of China. They have been aligned with each other ever since Russia helped Mao Zedong come to power in China. This is not a new alliance. They've always been aligned to take down the West. This is ingrained. And I'm the only journalist that has put out the information proving that the Russians faked the demise of the Soviet Union. The Communist Party only simply went underground. In fact, Putin even admitted this to Tucker Carlson in an interview. He said, you know, the Russian leadership initiated the fall of the Soviet Union, and went right over Tucker's head. He failed to remember that the official narrative was that it was a spontaneous revolution starting in the student riots in Leipzig that the Soviets couldn't control, they said. Well, that wasn't true at all. Erich Honecker on his deathbed said, Moscow gave me orders to let the student protest in Leipzig go forward and told all of the other dictators in the Soviet bloc to step down. So it was in order to get Western aid and trade, and we built Russia's entire oil system through after the phony fall of the Soviet Union. We gave them money. We gave them all kinds of things, let them have technology. We rebuilt. We built an entire nuclear warhead processing plant for them in Russia, which they locked us out of as soon as it was finished, so we couldn't tell what they were refurbishing inside. But in any case, I still think the trigger event won't happen until China's ready. And I think they know now that Taiwan's going to trigger a major response from the West. And so they're going to have to be prepared to do a nuclear first strike on U.S. military targets. And Russia will certainly be involved, having the largest nuclear weapons available. Now, I don't want to put people at ease. I'd rather they take your timeline and get prepared early, if it is early. I'm prepared right now. I've got, a pioneer. I'm not a hypocrite. I believe in what I do, and I'm fully prepared as much as you can. But I have an extended family, and trying to get them prepared is the next challenge, and then friends.
Oh, yeah.
But remember, talking about networks, Stephen, I'm a firm believer in keeping your network somewhat informal. In other words, don't join a militia. Militias generally are all infiltrated by the deep state. And they'll come after you and your weapons if you're part of a militia. But you can have informal relationships. And why I say keep it informal is because you have weekly prepared. You tend to talk too much and do less and depend on others if you join a preparedness group. It's fine to share information, but don't let that information become it's doing. It's getting the actual preparedness important. And remember what I said, to be careful not to share a lot about your own personal preparations. It'll come back to bite you someday. But you see, what I mean by informal network, I suggest and I consult on strategic relocation for people all the time about getting self-sufficient farms and retreats and doing a shelter system within that retreat, finding places where you can do basements. I cover that in strategic relocation. You know, the trouble is with the Appalachians and down into Texas and even the Ozarks, it's hard to do basements because of the underlying rock that's there. Now, it can be done, but it gets pretty expensive. You get out in the Midwest and in the far Intermountain West, everybody does basements. And so it allows you to have an easier. Now, you can do basements in East Texas, and if you don't have a water table problem, and you can even chisel it out of the caliche soil in other parts of Texas, but it's a lot more expensive. But be careful of your networks. Make sure that they're informal. Because you see, if you know who of your neighbors are really good, solid people, even if they're not aware of what's really going on, and people are resistant to learning about what's where, they don't want to worry, they just don't want to be bothered by it. But facts will wake them up when it happens. And if you know that they're good people, you can suddenly harness their ability. You're around a group of farmers, they all know how to weld, they all have tools, they all have diesel fuel, they have gasoline, you know, for their tractors and farm implements. You can harness those people and get them organized when the time comes, if you're wise and if you get to know them as friends. I know it's hard to do in some places that are very closed and tight-knit, but you can do that if you're very friendly.
I agree. I you know, that's the balance is, like you say, right? Not advertising what you have and how much you have. The other one is building that informal network or network around you, right? And I routinely say vet everybody, and especially in you're building people in your network you know you can trust, right? And even that, until you put them to the hard test, you're not going to know for sure if you can trust them. And that's the hard part, right? That's not something you can train people. That's not something you can really articulate in a way that's going to resonate with a lot of people, just because let's face it, our entire population has never dealt with adversity on the level that we're about to be hit with. And so you don't really know how people are going to react when they're in a deep survival situation. And let's face it, some of this is going to be deep survival for people.
Yes, it is.
And a part of the reason why my timeline is this year is just because I'm watching what the deep state's doing. And they're trying their hardest to come up with some kind of a false flag to manipulate the election process. That's why I think there's going to be something. Do I think it's going to be long-term? No, I think that you're right. You're probably dead on about China. In fact, China is not really in my decision cycle right now, because I think there's going to be enough to contend with here on the ground with DEI and some of the other things they're doing to the workforce right now that's going to push people out of the market and drive desperation along before we ever get to that kinetic phase with China. But I could be wrong. And
let me interject one thing, because we didn't get to talk a little bit about the election. I know you felt they might find an excuse to, you know, cancel or postpone the election, but I don't see why they should do that, because with, you know, mail-in ballots, you know, it's a recipe for a disaster in elections. Now, we're not probably going to see everybody's on to the fact you shut down voting in the middle of the night and they bring in truckloads of ballots. You know, they're going to be watching this time, because that's what happened in 2020. But they also had, you know, computer vote manipulation at the tabulation computer level. I covered the hacking of Edison Research, which compiles all of the state voting data and feeds it to the networks. Everything you see on television during election night comes from Edison Research. Okay, they're owned by a Spanish company, which is stupid to have our election ballots being counted by a foreign entity in the country. But I can tell you, it got hacked into. And I got the hack database. It was on a spreadsheet, and the person who hacked into it basically was able to document how many hundreds of thousands of votes would come in for Donald Trump, whether or not they were allocated or to him or flipped to Biden. And there were hundreds of thousands that were flipped to Biden, and some that many thousands that came in that were not allocated to Trump, that simply disappeared. And that was the quantitative evidence that Trump needed to win his court cases over the fraud of the election. But he was unfortunate enough to bring in Rudy Giuliani as his head attorney for that, and Rudy Giuliani's deep state. He was deeply involved in the cover-up of the 9/11, which, you know, as mayor of New York, and having his command center in Building 7, which went down by controlled demolition, he knew what was going on in 9/11. But he was drunk most of the time and was not a good attorney. None of his attorneys had any of the quantitative evidence, so the judges simply dismissed the cases, saying, yeah, you've proven there was some fraud, but you haven't proven quantitatively it would have made a difference in the election. So what I'm saying is, with all of these election computers still connected to the internet, why won't they simply steal it? And I think they will. After two assassination attempts for Donald Trump, and I've documented in the World Affairs Brief how both of those assassins had deep state connections. I mean, you know, and Brian Ruff, you know, how do you fly in first class with a measly salary, a part-time work that he's on? You fly first class to into Florida, and then you pick up a stolen vehicle and you pick up a weapon with an erased serial number. And you leave, according to the FBI, a note saying you failed. You leave it before you flee, because he didn't stop at that friend's house to drop off that note saying he failed. And you said, I mean, this is just incredibly stupid how they have not been able to cover up for the deep state connections. But with two assassinations attempted at Donald Trump, they're not going to let him win the election fair and square. I think the false polling started as soon as Kamala Harris, by a non-democratic process, got the nomination for the Democrats. All of a sudden, she was up 4 points. For what? I mean, she's the laughingstock as vice president, suddenly up 4 points. So that's an indication in my mind that the establishment media is going to steal the election from Donald Trump. So I don't see why they ought to cancel the election when they can claim that she's legitimately won. And now that they primed everybody not to believe that, you know, the election can be stolen, I think it's going to happen. But it speaks to what you're saying, Stephen. Once they get a Democratic mandate in here, it's going to be a disaster for this country. The immigration invasion is going to continue on steroids, the weaponization of law enforcement against, and especially if they can provoke Trump supporters into going and doing something violent to protest the theft of the election this time. That just plays into the hands of the Department of Homeland Security. We'll all be deep state domestic terrorists as far as they're concerned. So I think that's going to be a trigger event, is this outrage that's happened, the anguish about people's disappointment in this theft of the election happening again.
It's going to happen. Yeah. And I would say the reason why they would not want it to happen is if they know. So they've created a perfect storm. The way, if I'm looking at this the right way, they've set conditions so no one will buy the outcome of the election, no matter what. The left is not going to buy the Trump one. The right's not going to buy the Harris one. Perfect storm.
Yeah.
So the reason why I would think that they would want some kind of a false flag or black swan event would simply be because they know they can't get the cultural narrative back. They lost the cultural narrative in 2018. So the information war has not gone well for them. That's why nobody buys the polling numbers. Nobody likes Harris. Nobody buys into the narratives that are coming out of mainstream. Look, there's a third of the population that's always going to buy whatever BS they're fed by the mainstream. But more and more people are developing antibodies to the BS that's being pushed. And you're seeing more and more animus. But what's really killing them is not the animus across the country. It's the fact that more and more people are starting to see the gaslighting that's coming out of mainstream. They're seeing the fact the federal government has been weaponized against them, and that is growing and growing more discontent. And I can see that that would be a catalyst after the election, because what are they going to do when people start to question the election? They're going to start arresting people, and they're going to start saying that you're conducting election interference and hoping for a provocation, which will be a provocation. Because this time the guns will come out.
They are setting us up for that. They are setting us up. If you're trying, if you're going to question the election, you are interfering in the election. They've already set that pattern up. But let me set the record straight on terms of the minority that we're talking about that are going to get upset. Remember, they're only out of 350 million people here, there's only 168 registered voters, and you divide that by three, you have independents, Democrats, and Republicans. There's only 47 million Republicans in the United States of America out of 350 million. 47 million. And I estimate that about 20% of those are really pretty hardcore conservative. And out of those, probably 2 to 3% are really aware of the deep state and are, you know, no compromise type of thing. So I think we have to be careful to understand that we are a pretty small minority, and the mainstream main body of conservatives in the Republican Party have no stomach for revolution. They have no stomach for civil war. They're just trying to, you know, live the dream and fight in, you know, fight to stay alive through this massive inflation that we're having. But, you know, I don't see, you know, it would have to be something pretty severe to cause people to really be upset. And, you know, and the deep state is very expert at keeping people relatively dumbed down and soothed, et cetera. You look at every red state in the country, every major city's governed by a Democrat, and every major city, even in red states, are covered by a mainstream media that is not our friend. Every single one, including Salt Lake City, Boise, Oklahoma City, et cetera. You may have a token station or two, especially talk radio, that speaks to our people, but the mainstream media, the print media, and the main television stations are not on our side. And that keeps people asleep, because it's amazing, and I know this from publishing a newsletter that goes to the hardcore people, that they're... Too many conservatives send their kids to public schools where they get propagandized, and too many conservatives listen to the evening news and mainstream news. Now, a lot of them listen to Fox News as well. But remember, Fox News will never touch the subject of conspiracy. They will never touch it. Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly before him, he would crucify you if it ever breathe a hint about 9/11 being a deep state operation or the JFK assassination and any of those things. They do have good conservative information about things, but they're, you know, the Murdochs who own Fox News are globalists, and they're not our friends. And so they do shut down. That's why Tucker Carlson got ousted. And sadly, you know, as good as Tucker Carlson is, he doesn't know his conspiratorial history, or he would have seen all of the interesting things that Putin admitted to him that he missed in his famous interview with him in Moscow.
Well, my question then, it begs the question, if I'm hearing you correctly, is that, you know, the best course of action for this is to be hunkered down and ride it out. And if I'm looking at a timeline now, we're in 24, so it's a 6-year window until real conflict begins, or at least we're in mid, you know, somewhere after kickoff at 2030. So is the strategy to hunker down and ride it out as best as you can? Or is the strategy to hunker down and ride it out until the system fails? Because you can make a case for both.
You know, Stephen, I do think there's a high probability that the deep state, the globalists, who, remember, the globalists want this third world war as much as Russia and China do, because they want this, especially if you see we take a hit in our military, a nuclear first strike against our military, that gives them an excuse to come out of their bunkers and say, you know, we didn't know this was happening, which is a lie. But now that we have no way to defend ourselves unless we join in a militarized global government. And I think the new EU army that is secretly being funded as we speak to replace NATO will be the seed stock military-wise for the new militarized global government. But I'm not sure that they're going to be able to control the events. You know, if you have a year without electricity, and that's what I think happens in an EMP strike, because we don't stockpile any of the long distance transformers in this country. Utility man corrected me about this, about how soon I thought the grid would come back up. He says, no, no, no. these things are big as a semi truck, and they're all made in China, and we only have two or three in the United States for the hundreds that will be blown out on an EMP strike. So we're not getting the grid back up, because you can't start up a grid unless you have, you can't start up a power plant, even a nuclear power, unless you have a grid to absorb the extra electricity that you produce. So, you know, what happens to the social fabric of a nation, a year of pillaging, hatred, murder, robbery and rape?
Cannibalism.
You know, it could
slavery.
Get really bad. And I just don't know how they can control. I mean, even the deep state is going to run out of money. I mean, electronics don't work. They don't have access to their bank accounts. Their yachts don't work. And a lot of them have built, you know, retreats and things. Some of them stupidly went to New Zealand and Australia to build retreats. They don't realize the Chinese are going to occupy those two countries someday. They have to take the island chain just like Japan did in World War II and are planning to do so. But so I'm not sure that we won't degrade into some kind of internecine warfare between where evil starts to fight against evil and other things. And so we do not only have to ride out the war, we have to ride out the long-term scenario. There may not be a, in fact, I'm sure you won't see an AI robotic society after this war. I don't think the World Economic Forum knows, even though they're globalists, I don't think the top globalists have told them that they're planning on getting us into a third world war and what it's going to entail. Because you can't have an AI robotic society without a constant supply of electricity and a peaceful society. And we're anything but a peaceful society with our disunity involved, with the growing trends in gays, homosexuals, and transgenders, and all of those things, the wokeness that's hitting in our military. I see the society coming down. Even religious communities are getting very worldly. I mean, very few evangelical Christians have a worldview that really thinks that there's going to be tribulation. Most of them think they're going to get raptured out of it, and they're not preparing. So this doesn't speak well for what's going to happen. So not only am I prepared to hunker down and make sure I survive the war, I plan on two things. One, I do believe that God always tends to preserve a remnant, even in the worst of circumstances. In other words, there will be some people that are preparing, that are good people. And if they band together in rural neighborhoods with other good people, and that's why I really recommend red states where you have at least 70 to 80% conservative, population base, so that the population base is generally, you know, good, solid, and will knit back together as far as possible. But I think there'll only be semi-peace in rural areas away from big cities. I think big cities will never recover, frankly. And so, yes, I'm preparing for the long term. And that's why I recommend to my clients that I consult with, not only if they can afford it, not only get a retreat, but try to get a retreat in a very rural area where growable, where you've got irrigation water and other things that you can grow crops for the long term, because food storage only lasts for so long and you're going to want to be able to raise some animals and do so. And you have to be private. You can't do that in a backyard in a suburban area. Your tomatoes would be picked clean before they're even ripe. But in rural areas where you have fellow people with arms protecting against refugees coming in, and we have good farmers who know how to farm, I think that that's where my hope lies.
I'm processing that. That's a lot to take in. But I knew, I kind of figured you were gone there, and I knew I was going to get the, I know I'll get the question. There's probably going to be 50 questions off of this. I want to close this out because I know we're coming up on an hour here. I want to keep you under an hour because I want to do this again with you.
You know, we can come back at some time and answer some of those questions.
I was just going to say, I absolutely want to do it. What I really want to do is get you on a panel with some of the other military folks on my round table.
And I'd love to.
They were all chomping at the bit to be on the show tonight. I'm like, nope, I'm doing a one-on-one with it tonight. It was hard enough to get this scheduled, to get this time set aside. But I'm thinking in 2 weeks we do this again, because I think after October 7th, we'll see some kind of retaliation from either Iran, Iraq, whatever the case may be. I think we'll see some kind of retaliation, and we'll have a lot to talk about there. The one thing I want to ask you, though, which I know I'm going to get asked before we wrap this up is, if there's a state in the union where you think people should start looking at, what would that be? Because you've downgraded Colorado, downgraded Florida. What would be the state that people should be looking at?
Well, you know, my top rated two states are Utah and Idaho. And unfortunately, the government owns a lot of land in those two states. Idaho's better than Utah in that regard, but Utah's got this Mormon population, which if any population is going to knit together faster in a crisis, it's the Mormons, because they believe in preparedness and they have this alternative government system. I mean, you may not be Mormons, but they're good people and they do take care of one another, which is going to be essential for these types of things. But, you know, as I tell my clients, there is no one place that everybody can go to, because, you know, you have family, a lot of have health problems, they have climate limitations, they have family, they want to be together. And I am very careful to disabuse people of that. You know, don't lead your family. Don't stay where family, if your family's in New York City, don't stay close to New York City because you have family there. Get out of the area and lead so that they leave New York and come to safety. That's what you ought to be thinking of if you really love your family. But it is so individual. That's why, you know, these communities that are put together, these survival communities, have such a difficult time getting people to come and buy into it, because it's very difficult. I mean, there's some great communities in northern Arizona and other places that I've consulted with, but how many people can live that far away from their job or family, or tolerate the heat or the cold? Or, you know, there's 1,000 different factors. The reason Utah and Idaho are so highly rated, first of all, they have this solid base of conservative, 80% conservatives in those states. Unfortunately, they both have Rhino Republican governors. Every red state has a Rhino Republican governor, and generally the legislature is controlled by Rhino Republicans as well. But still, they have to deal with the fact that they can't disabuse the 80%, or they really have people upset on their hands. But the nice thing about those two states is that they're 800 to 1,000 miles away from the population density centers on the left coast, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle. Through trackless deserts and waste, you just can't get to those two states by foot. You can't do it. And they're 500 miles from Denver, through the trackless Rocky Mountains. So there's a great deal of buffer zone built into those two areas. If you discount Salt Lake City and Boise, which are no-go areas, they're not as bad as Chicago or New York by any means, but still they're Democratic.
I don't know. Have you seen the man buns in Idaho? There's a lot of man buns and betas there.
Yeah, I know, but it's still it's not a huge amount of minorities or problem people in terms of quantity, and they can be handled. But still, I don't recommend people relocate to those particular cities. But the rural areas in both states are really top-notch, and you can build basements almost everywhere.
Man, how can people find you?
Well, I have two websites. And by the way, your people ought to know I'm running for president under the Constitution Party. I'm on four states, Utah, Idaho, Nevada, and Arizona. And I'm just trying to alert people to what I know about the deep state and about this coming war. And I'm not going to win the election, but they'll remember only one candidate told them the truth about what was happening. So my two websites are joelskousen.com. That's joelskousen. And that you find everything about my campaign for president, including my video. I have a 10-part series on my history of the deep state that I gave to Lost Arts Radio a couple of years ago. And it's a good listen. If you have several days, take one video a night and get a history of the deep state. I think you'll enjoy it. And then my worldaffairsbrief.com website gets you to my World Affairs Brief. And you can get a free sample copy of the current issue by clicking on Request a Sample on the left-hand side. And it tells you the various options to subscribe.
I just posted those in the comments. And I know you will get a bunch of people hitting your website. So, awesome. So I want to do this in 2 weeks, Joel, with a panel.
Let's do it. Let's do it, Stephen.
these guys are chomping at the bit to be on with you. So I'm going to open the floodgates and let you go through the experience, because it's an experience with these guys, just so you know. Any final thoughts for the audience? Because I know that was a lot.
Well, I have a special essay on both my websites called The Still Small Voice of Conscience. And I'm a real believer that you're not going to survive even with your preparations unless you tie into that divine source of prompting and that helps you improve, overcome your weaknesses. And unfortunately, as I talk about in my essay, Satan has access to that, and he feeds you all kinds of excuses of why you can't do what's right and why you shouldn't and why you don't want to lose weight or get into shape. And so learn how to listen to that still small voice and detect which is the voice the divine source is trying to help you and which is the source trying to weaken you, and life will be better.
I agree wholeheartedly. Jill, thanks again for jumping on. I know you were scrambling to get here, so I appreciate that, my friend. We'll do this again.
Greasy hands to prove.
I saw that.
My breakdown.
That's awesome. Hey, it's not a TV. It's not a show without some kind of cursory IT setup. That's for sure.
Normally,
we go through comm issues, mic issues. So anyway, thanks again for jumping on. I'll be back tomorrow night with the roundtable. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.